Okay.
So good morning, everyone. Welcome. This morning, if you want, there's papers over there if anybody wants to follow along, English and Hebrew, with the Pesukim that we'll be reading. This morning, is I want to do something that I feel is very interesting and fun to do, because when we study Sefer Bereshit, and Bereshit is like such a loaded book, you could study it really your entire life and never get to the full depth of everything, and to analyze all of the characters and the different personalities is really a monumentous kind of thing for a person to do. But what I like to sometimes do is to look at some of the secondary characters. Meaning we know all about Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, we've heard the stories, we've analyzed them, and there's so much there, and there's probably more that we can get into, but what sometimes doesn't get our attention are some of those secondary, those supporting actors and actresses who play a role in the story and are sometimes, you know, in between the lines, and they're having an impact, but we don't spend a lot of time focusing on them because we're so entranced by the main characters. And one of those characters that I want to take a look at in this week's parasha is the character of Lot. Okay, Lot plays an interesting role in this week's parasha. He's definitely a supporting, maybe if not a third level kind of character to his uncle Avraham. But he has an interesting role here, and his presence is very interesting to analyze. And so I want to take a look from the text of the Torah that we see what the Torah tells us about him, what we can understand about him, and see a little bit about his metamorphosis, as I like to say. And then we'll also compare that to what our rabbis say about Lot. So before we get started, I just want to throw out a question to you, and I'll hear what you have to say. When you hear the name of Lot, what are your impressions? What do you know about him? What do you think about him? Is he a positive character, negative character? Well, how would you say? Negative character. Naive. Okay. Anything? Anyone? So we view him overwhelmingly as a negative kind of character. Why do we view him negatively? Huh? Because he ends up traveling to Sodom. And so why does that make him negative? Because... because he ends up attaching himself with negative people. He has a little bit of a reluctancy, if not him, his son-in-laws also, to be able to leave. So that decision kind of encapsulates who he might be. And we tend to judge him based on that decision. Are there any other clues or things that we might take to view him negatively or maybe potentially positively?
Now they're making us think of that.
Uh-huh, okay.
Yeah. He did leave with Abraham.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. So that might send us the impression that maybe Lot started out as a positive, as a potential. Ah, that's the word that we're looking for, right? As a potential protagonist, and then maybe where he ended up was very different. And that's what I want to try to claim over here, is that when we look at the text of the Torah, and we'll see how our rabbis also read it, I think we're going to see that Lot starts out as a very positive character, someone who we have a lot of hopes for, someone who we has a lot of potential, and at somewhere along the way, kind of veered off the path. And we really want to pinpoint what is it that happened to him? How could it be that a character of such ended up in such a different place than we had thought? And so sometimes the difficulty and challenge with doing this is we have to kind of wipe ourselves clear of the story. We can't let that end game of where we know the story goes allow it to impact where the story starts. So we kind of have to pretend for a minute that we don't really know the outcome of the story and take a look from the beginning and see where that takes us. And so if you look at your source sheet, on source number one, the Torah goes out of its way a number of times to emphasize Lot journeying with his uncle Avraham. So take a look at source number one. Terah took his son Abram, his grandson Lot, and the son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai. Notice the placement of Lot. This is a phenomenal pasuk for a minute. It says, Terah took Avram, he took Lot, his son, his grandson, and he also took Sarai, his daughter-in-law, the wife of Avram. What is interesting about the order of people mentioned in that pasuk? Yeah, right? You would have expected, it should have said, that Terah took Avram and his wife Sarai and his grandson Lot. But Lot is actually placed in this context of the pasuk before Avraham's own wife, before Sarah. That's not by accident. That's not by accident. The Torah is hinting to us something over here. What that is, we'll see, and maybe we'll have to think about in a minute. The wife of his son Abraham, and they set out together from Ur of the Chaldeans, Ur Kasdim, for the land of Canaan. But when they had come as far as Haran, they settled there. They only made it as far as Haran. We find that Terach ends up dying there. But I think the placement of the characters of this Pasuk are almost the way of the Torah hinting to us that at this moment, Lot is actually a more important character than Abraham's own wife. What makes him such an important character?
He's a blood relative.
And therefore he might be the what?
Well, Abraham doesn't have a son yet.
Good. Abraham, we know right before this text of this Pasuk, the Torah makes it very clear that Abraham and Sarai are barren. They can't have children. And so this might be the way of the Torah saying, here is their quote unquote adopted son. He's right in between the two of them. Lot stands in this position as the heir apparent to Avram, and maybe even on the level of his own biological son. That's what the Torah, just by placing the names in that order, is sort of hinting to us. But something,
also yeah. Write it like this?
No, let's take well. No, take a look at source. Take a look at source 3. Right. Take a look at source 3. Now this tells us when Avram went himself. It says Vaikach Avram. Avram went. Et Sarai Ishto. First, he took his wife. Ve'et Lot ben Achiv, and then he took Lot, his nephew, right? So there, the order is switched. Now that could be
the names. I'm saying, huh? Why do they have to say the wife and the brother? Why can't they just say took Sarai, took Lot?
Why do they give their relationship, their description over and over again? That's interesting. I don't know. I didn't think about that. Right here in the first one, it relates everybody to Terach. So in the first source, it explains everybody relations to Terach. Yeah, and then it also repeats it again, their relationship between the two of them. That's a good question. I think we have to maybe put that on the side. I didn't think about that. I didn't notice it. But it shows that you're doing a close reading of the text, and that's what we want. No, that's very good. To notice a question like that, why does the Torah keep repeating the relationship of these individuals? Each time it's to a different person. In the first one it was to Terach, now it's to Avram. Is interesting. I don't know. I'd have to spend some time thinking about that and see what the commentaries say. But I don't have an answer for you on that one. Maybe we can in the course find an explanation to it. By the way, if you go back to source 2, just to emphasize your question a little bit more, in source 2, when it mentions Lot, it does not mention his relationship here. So I don't know why. One place it does, one place it doesn't. It's something to keep in mind. I don't know. I have to look into it. Maybe I'll come up with an answer for you by Shabbat. But again, so the Torah again is emphasizing. So it's source number 2 also, at the beginning of Lech Lecha. Avram went forth as the Lord had commanded him, and Lot went with him. Again, the Torah emphasizes Lot's participation, and here it mentions Lot and not his wife at all. Right? So there's a clear emphasis that the Torah is putting on Lot traveling with his uncle Avram. And then again, Vaikach Avram et Sarai Ishto. Avram took his wife Sarai and his brother's son Lot and all the wealth that they had amassed and the persons that they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. So each step as Avram is making his way from out of Haran to the place of Canaan where God is telling him to go, each step of the way, the Torah is reminding us who is with him. And in interesting orders, but clearly Lot is a major figure. Without having talked about his personality, without having heard him speak, no conversation, just the way the Torah sets up the verses clearly indicates to us that he's an important person. Okay? Very good. Now, Avram gets to the land, and his first challenge, his first test when he gets there, is a famine. Right? And as a result, Avram goes down to Egypt. There, the Torah does not really specify that he took Lot with him, but it's clear that he took everybody in his caravan. There was a famine, and they went down to Egypt. And in Egypt, we find the story there of Avram and Sarah, and their whole struggle with Paro. And really, Lot gets no mention over there. He's sort of not anywhere in the scene during the whole back and forth with Avram and Sarai in Mitzrayim, and her being taken and getting her back and Paro getting sick. So we don't really hear any more about Lot until they journey back from Mitzrayim. And so that's in source number 4. In source number 4, it says, Vayal Avram in Mitzrayim. Avram went back up after this whole fiasco in Egypt with his wife. He comes back up. Who? Himself. Ve'ishto, his wife. Ve'chol asher lo, and everything else that he has. Velot imo hanegba, and Lot is with him in the desert. What do you notice about that pasuk?
Going down in the ranks.
Aha. Uh-huh. So you can see again the placement. He's going down, right? So once upon a time, Lot was even maybe before his wife. Then we saw a pasuk, he was after the wife, but he was definitely before all of their other possessions. If you look back at source 3, it says, Velot ben Ahiv, he took Lot his son, ve'et ko rechusham ar jerachashu, and all of their possessions. So once upon a time, Lot was before the wife, then he was after the wife, but before the possessions. Now he's after the wife, after the possessions, he's at the very end. What is the text indicating to you with that? That Lot is starting to file his way down the ranks. He's starting to lose favor in the eyes, I guess, of Avram. Maybe not Avram, but at least us as the reader, the narrator, whoever's, you know, the Torah itself who's narrating the story to us, is telling us there seems to be a fallout that's starting to occur as a result of coming up from Egypt. And we find that right after that, we have the famous fight between the shepherds of Avram and the shepherds of Lot. And they're getting into a fight between each other. There's a lot of confrontation, there's tension. And Avram gives the famous ultimatum to Lot. Now, I want to stop for a minute because I have a feeling that the way I'm about to explain the ultimatum that Avram gives to Lot is not the way you studied it in grade school. What does Avram tell Lot in his ultimatum? What does he give him? What does he tell him? Who remembers? Tells him, if you go... Good. If I go left, if you go left, you get a choice, Lot. Take whichever side you want. If you go left, I'll go right. And if I go right, I'll go left. What does Lot choose? Does he choose left or right? He chooses Sedom. Is it left or is it right? Huh? Left. Looking, thinking in the map? Left. Maybe it's left, right. We're not sure. Right? No? We're not sure, right? What's interesting is most people, when they read the Psukim, they assume that Lot chose one of those two options. He chose neither. He chose neither left nor right. What Avraham's choice was to Lot was, he wanted Lot to stay in Israel. The separation between Avraham and Lot was not a permanent separation by Avraham's mindset. He said, look, we can't stay together because we're having a lot of tension with our cattle, with all of these issues. There's a tense time, so we need to split up for a little bit. But we're going to reconvene. At this moment, Avraham still doesn't have any children. And God has promised him a nation. God has promised him control over the land of Israel. God has promised him to be a great people and have a lot of children. Avram's only natural understanding is it's going to come from Lot, his nephew. That's how he's been thinking the whole time. So Avram tells him, we just got to split up for a while, but eventually we're going to get back together. So you go right. Now, if you think about where Avraham is standing north-south of Israel. He tells him, you want to go to the north of Israel? You go to the north and I'll go to the south. You want to go left? You want to go to the south of Israel? I'll go to the north. But we're all going to stay in Israel. Eventually we're going to think, and we're going to come back together, and we're all going to grow. Right, that was Avraham's real ultimatum. It was a temporary split. What does Lot do? Take a look at source 5. Lot, the pasuk says, "Vayisa Lot et enav." Lot lifted his eyes. That's a very strange language to use. Lot looked about him and saw how well watered was the whole plain of the Jordan, all of it. This was before the Lord had destroyed Sedom and Amorah, all the way to Tzohar, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt. Lot looks in a completely different direction. Rather than going north or south of Israel, Lot vayisalot et enav. He turns his eyes away from both of the options that God provides for him, and he turns to the Jordan Valley. He turns in a completely different direction. And what does he see at the Jordan Valley? What does he notice?
The land is really nice.
Beautiful, greenery, lush, place where he can grow a business, the place where we can have as much as he needs to have pasture for his sheep, for his cattle, to grow his wealth and his possessions. That's what he sees. And that's very attractive to Lot. And that is the motivation that Lot has to choose the land of Sedom and Amorah. Right? That's his motivation. That's where he wants to go. He's not interested anymore in playing this game with Avraham of Israel and I'm going to be your heir. Lot is making a conscious decision not just to go out of the land, not just to separate from Avraham, but to completely detach himself from everything that Avraham stands for. That's what the Torah over here is hinting. And it was a slow decline. Slowly but surely, as they travel from place to place, Lot continues to decline out of that role. He doesn't seem to be interested. And when Avraham makes the split and says he gives him an opportunity to split from him, rather than choose a temporary split where they can get back together and Lot can be the man, Lot decides, I'm out. I'm going to go take this other path. I'm going to completely separate myself. And I want to read to you the words that our rabbis use at this very moment. At that moment, after you see in source 5, I bolded the words, Vayivhar lo Lot. Lot chose for himself et kol kikar hayadin, the whole plain of the Jordan. Vayisa Lot mikedem, and Lot journeyed eastward. Look at the rabbis write about the Lot journeying eastward, mikedem, that word. They say the following. I'll read to you exactly the line that they bring over here. It says, Nasa me'etzel Avraham. He left from in front of Avraham. V'halach lo lema'aravo shel Avraham. And he went to the western side. Nimtzam nosea mimizrach lema'arav. He's going east and west. That's the literal interpretation. Umidrash agada, but the deeper rabbinic interpretation, hisia atzmo mikadmono shel olam. He removed himself from the forefront of the world. In other words, Avraham was on the cutting edge of the world. Avraham was spreading monotheism. He was spreading a new belief. He was trying to uproot the fallacies of the world and try to get the world to start thinking in a progressive and modern kind of manner for his time. Lot said, I'm going from in front of that. I don't want to be a part of that. Amar, he said, E-F-Shi, I can no longer take it anymore. Lo be'Avram, not with Avram, ve'lo be'Elohav, and not with his God. The rabbis view Lot's decision, and it's not written in the text, but if you pick up on all the clues that we've been talking about, the placement of Lot's name, what he's looking for, and all of these different things, and the placement of the fight between him, his decision to go, they viewed that decision as more than just where do I want to live and grow a business. That was a decision about who Lot wanted to be. Where did he want the trajectory of his life to go? Rabbi Foreman gives an interesting mashal. He says, decisions like this, really, they're more than just decisions of where I want to grow a family or a business. They're about who you are. Right? He says, he gives you an example. He says, you take a guy who's a scientist. Okay? He's on the cutting edge of cancer research. He's trying to develop a cure for cancer. And his boss comes to him and says, I have a wonderful opportunity for you. There's a new drug that's being tested, this and that. You can be on the head of the team to be able to do that. But you got to move to Sweden to be able to do it. Now, at that moment, this person now has a choice. But that choice is more than just, where do I want to live? It's, who am I? Am I a scientist? Am I somebody who defines himself by my work, by what I do? And I just happen to also be a father and have kids and be married. And I do that on my quote-unquote spare time. If that's how you view your life, then it's worthy for you to go, take the job. Maybe you leave your kids behind. Maybe you bring them with them. You're compromising your home life and your family life. You're compromising it for your work and for your business and where you want to go. Who are you? If you view yourself more as a family man, as a person who's a father of children, who you care mostly about that, but your job is secondary and you'll stay with what you have, so then you choose that. Those critical decisions cause us to introspect on who we are, what our values are, and what kind of people we want to be, what direction we want to go. And so that's where Lot is. Lot is at a crossroads at that moment of, do I want to be part of Avraham and his promise and this idea to be a nation and be his heir? Or am I done with that? And by making the decision to move to Sedom, it was more than just attaching himself to bad people. That was another layer of it, which the Torah tells us that the people of Sedom were bad. But even before that, just the act of splitting from Avraham to go in a completely different direction is the reason why the rabbis look at Lot in that negative way, that he decided to remove himself from the camp of Abraham. Yeah.
I have two questions.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse my ignorance, because I didn't
know. No, it's fine.
Whatever. So do we know why they took Lot in the first place?
Who took him? Oh, why Abraham took him?
Yeah, or Abraham's father.
That's a good question.
Maybe he didn't want to leave his father. Maybe he feels like he was uprooted for no reason. I don't know if the text before we started here mm-hmm. goes into that. I have no idea.
So we could pick up, it's an excellent question. We could pick up on a couple of cues. If you go back to the first source, it seems like you're right. Lot was somewhat taken against his will. There it says, Vayikach Terach. Terach took Avram and Lot. Sounds like they kind of went against their will. But if you look at the next one, it says, Vayelech Avram. Avram went. Vayelech ito Lot, and Lot went with him. So that is not Vayikach anymore. It's not he was taken against his will. That seems to be that Lot made a conscious decision at that moment to go with Avram. At that moment, he felt that that was good for him, and he wanted to be a part of it. At some point, something changed for him, right?
He's like, I don't want to move anymore. I was happy with my father, or okay, whatever I'm done.
That could be. It could be he just got hajjed, as we would say. He was done with all of the moving around, and it's clear that Avraham is going to live a life of constant motion, right, of constant moving, and so maybe he bought out of that 100%. So this kind of leads us to the. You had another question.
Yeah, my other question was, why did they leave in the first place? It says that.
Go for it. Yeah.
Why did they go out on this journey? Because his father wasn't spreading.
So why did who leave? Why did who leave? Terah, the first?
Yeah, why did
good.
He...
We don't know why he left.
Because he's not spreading monotheism.
Correct. He's not spreading the monotheism. We don't know why he left. Okay. The text of the Torah does not tell us why he left. Does not tell us. The Midrash, the rabbis try to fill in that gap. And this is where that famous story of Avraham breaking the statues, that's where it comes in. It comes in to explain why the family picked up and moved in the first place. They moved because Avraham broke the statues, and so Terah brought Avraham in front of Nimrod, the king, and said, I'm going to kill you, and he threw him into the fire, and Avraham was saved, and so the family was in danger, and so the family had to leave. The Midrash paints us an interesting story, and we have to understand that story more in depth. It's beyond the scope of our class. It's Midrash. It's not written anywhere in the text of the Torah. One of the more common misconceptions is that people think that that story is so popular and so familiar to us. And don't get me wrong, you can take that at face value. I'm not saying that it didn't happen. The Rambam codifies it in his law. He writes that this is one of, you believe that, and he brings that whole story, that Rambam Maimonides, who's not shy about translating or explaining Midrashim in a metaphoric sense, he definitely takes it literally. So there's no question that we're accepting of that Midrash, but it's not in the text of the Torah. And if we did a separate class, we can hold the whole class on why it's not in the text of the Torah, why the rabbis taught it to us, and what's the meaning of it. That requires a whole separate lecture in and of itself. But it's not anywhere found in the Torah. It does come to explain Auntie Nancy's question, which is, how come they picked up in the first place, right? All right. Why Avraham left, though, that is clear. Why the original grandfather Terah left, we're not 100% sure by the text, and the Midrash tries to fill it in. Why Avraham left, we know, because God told him,
right,
go, lech lecha. That's why Avraham goes, right? So you do see, that was another interesting textual nuance that we noticed, which is, in the beginning, Lot was somewhat taken against his will, but when Avraham goes, it says vayelech, that he went with him, which means he made a conscious decision to be part of it. Yeah.
We say that when they use the same words in the Torah, it can mean the same thing.
You can link them up, yeah, sure.
Okay. So with Akedat Yitzchak, didn't it also say Vayisayet Enav? We say that it kind of appeared before him. So could this have been a test for Lot? Like Hashem showed
him? Oh, you want to say it from Lot's perspective. Vayisayet Lot et Enav.
Yeah. Like Hashem put it in front of him and said, you could take this, make this decision, you're sealing your fate, or you could...
I definitely think that could be a possibility. When you link up words and stories, there is a lot of richness that you can get out of it. I haven't explored that personally, but you could potentially make connections that maybe Lot is someone in a similar position as Yitzchak. Like if you wanted to compare Lot and Yitzchak, two people having to journey with Avraham and deciding if they want to buy into Avraham's plan, like Yitzchak also was an entity. Maybe he wanted to turn around and say, Dad, I don't want to be killed, you know, I want to live. I'll see you later. Right? That was an option in front of him he could have chosen. That's a very interesting connection, 100%. Another interesting one is the whole story in the beginning of Lech Lecha is connected to the story of the Akedah. And this, again, would require an entire workup. There's only two places in the whole Torah where the words Lech Lecha are used. It's in the beginning of this week's parasha and in Akedat Yitzchak, when Abraham goes to do the binding of Yitzchak. It's only two places in the whole Torah where that's mentioned, and there's many, many more parallels. But that would take us into a whole nother lecture. So the last question, though, that we have to answer is, all of this is very nice. We've done a very, very close reading of the text. We've noticed some interesting nuances, how Lot had a falling out, and how he made a conscious decision to separate himself from Avraham. The question is, why? What changed for Lot? What happened in his life that caused him to have such a shift? It would be very hard for us to simply say he just woke up one morning and said, you know, I'm done with it. I mean, maybe you could say that. He just got hajjed. But I think that there's more there. I think there's more within the text of the Torah that we could bring out to kind of explain why Lot had this shift. And it comes, I believe, from one very interesting statement. Look at source number 5 again, where Lot chooses the area of the Yarden, of the Jordan River. And I bolded it for you. It says, Lot turned his eyes and saw the well-watered, saw how well-watered was the whole plain of the Jordan, all of it. This was before the Lord had destroyed Sodom and Amorah all the way to Tzohar, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt. What is going through Lot's mind when he sees the beautiful Jordan Valley? He's thinking about Egypt. He makes a comparison between this land and the land of Egypt. I like to say, and I heard this from my Rabbi Harold Sutton, that what shifted everything for Lot, even though he's not mentioned anywhere in that story, was the journey down to Egypt. When Abraham got to the land and there was famine, so Lot, his nephew, sees, something's not right here. There's famine, we got to travel. And they go to Egypt. What does Egypt provide for them? Egypt provides stability, provides food, provides sustenance for them, right? Lot is happy with that. Lot sees the culture in Egypt. He sees the way they live. He sees the wealth. He's very enamored by it. He likes it. He's drawn to it. To the point where when they leave, you could almost imagine for yourself that Lot kind of leaves reluctantly, as you can see from the order that he's placed in the Pasuk. Vaya'al Avram. Avram goes up. Avram wants to get out of Mitzrayim. He's not interested in Egypt. Who's the last person mentioned in the text? It's Lot. It's almost like you can picture Lot getting dragged by the camels up from Egypt. He doesn't want to go. He doesn't want to leave. He loves Egypt. He's loving the culture. He's loving the system. He's loving the wealth. And so when he has a decision to make where he's going to go, what does he choose? He chooses a land that's like Egypt for him. He sees the Jordan Valley as very reminiscent of Egypt. And so he chooses it because it's like Egypt. What did he love so much about Egypt? What was so great about it? Not just the wealth and the stability that doesn't exist in the land of Israel, but I want to read to you an interesting comparison that the Torah makes later on between Israel and the land of Egypt. And I'll read it to you in English and you'll see what the difference is. The Pasuk says like this. This is all the way at the end of the Torah when the Jews are about to go into the land of Israel. Look what God says to them. For the land to which you come to possess it is not like the land of Egypt. The land of Israel is not like the land of Egypt that you left, where you came from. Where you would plant your seed and water it on foot like a vegetable garden. The land of Egypt was a place where you went, you watered it by foot, a vegetable garden, beautiful, unreal. But the land to which you cross over to possess it, the land of Israel, is the land of mountains and valleys. From the rain of heaven, it will drink water. A land that Hashem your God seeks out. The eyes of Hashem your God are always upon it, from the beginning of the year to year's end. What is the difference between Egypt and Israel? What's the difference, huh? How does the land of Israel rely on Hashem? What do they need? They need rain, right? Says the Ramban over here. The Ramban gives an unbelievable explanation. He says Egypt can live without God. Why can they live without God? They don't need God. They don't need rain. They have the Nile River. The Nile easily irrigates everything. They go to the Nile. They draw their water. They do everything by foot. Life is easy for them. They don't need to rely on God. The land of Israel is a land of mountains and valleys. You're not going to be able to walk anywhere to go get your water source. Where does your water source have to come from? It has to come from above. It has to come from God. It's a land where he drinks from the rainwater that comes down. And so inherently, living in the land of Israel requires a person to have a relationship with God. One of the easiest ways that the Jewish people figured out if they were doing the right thing or the wrong thing was if there was no rain. If there was no rain, that was a sign that we need to do teshuvah, we need to be better, God's not bringing rain. We need to strengthen our relationship with God. In Egypt, you don't have that. Nobody needs God. It's a godless society because of the not needing to rely upon God. Is that a negative thing or is that a positive thing?
It's a strong test.
It depends on your perspective. If you're Abraham, who loves has his strong belief in God, who's able to hang on to it, that's what you want. I want to have a connection with God. And so be it. If that means I have to rely on God for rain and for my support and I have to pray to Him, that's what I want. If you're someone like Lot, who saw famine when he first got to the land of Israel and needs to go to Egypt to be able to survive and wants an easy life, somewhere where he can just grab onto things, I'm not interested in Israel. I want something that's more like Egypt. And he finds that in the Jordan Valley. And that's why he goes there. The difference between living a land of Israel is living a land where, as the text says, the eyes of Hashem, your God, are always on it. God is always looking at that. God's focused, hyper-focused on the land of Israel. And as by extension, the people of Israel. Yeah.
Does that mean he doesn't believe in God as much? I mean,
it shows that he lacked that faith or that desire to try to create that relationship. That's why the rabbis say that at that moment when he moved, he chose a place where it was going to be easy for him. And he said, I don't want Abraham and I don't want his God. I don't want to be forced to be in a situation. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, to that extent. Or he didn't believe or he wasn't interested. Right. He wasn't interested in building a relationship with God based on those principles. It wasn't worth it to him. I'd rather go and have the easy life. That's the difference. That's what changes Lot's focus and his perspective. And that's why the rabbis look at him as something of a negative character. But I think we could relate very much to Lot. I think all of us could relate very much to Lot. Because if I gave you a choice between having to build a relationship with God in order to get what you need, right? If I had a choice between two people, I said you could work as hard as you need to work, but everything's going to come to you automatic, like Egypt, versus God will help me, He'll rain the water down very easy, but I need to build a relationship with Him. I think most of us would probably, we can relate to Lot's choice, because we want to have that sustenance, we want to provide for our families. And sometimes the trust in Hashem that He'll provide is very difficult. It tests our faith. We have tests of faith all the time. But we're responsible to not go in Lot's path, to try and choose the path of Avraham. That's the path that's laid before Am Yisrael, is building a relationship through those. When we struggle in business, when we struggle in whatever other needs that we have, we have to struggle together with God. We have to build that relationship with God. We have to continue to do the things that we need to do. And it's a tremendous test of faith, but that's our responsibility. To be clear, I don't think that Lot was an evil character. I think it's overly harsh to say Lot was evil by any stretch. I think he was weak in his ability to connect through his belief. He wasn't an evil person by any means. Look what happens in Sodom. He goes to the people of Sodom and he stands out. He's a shining star in Sodom. He takes in the angels. He gives them food. He's considered, you know, one of the righteous people in Sodom. He clearly has benefited from his time spent with his uncle Abraham. He's clearly learned certain lessons. He's clearly developed as a person. What lacked and why he couldn't be the next heir to Abraham, why he couldn't fill that role, is because he couldn't make that jump to ultimate faith and trust in Hashem when the times got to the hardest point. When the going got tough, the tough didn't get going for Lot. He wasn't able to push through. And so he's not an evil character, but he falls a little bit short. And so it has to transition to somebody else who's going to have more faith and more ability to grab on to that belief of Abraham and what he's going to provide. So just to sum it all up, I think a couple of things that you could take out here is you see what happens when you do a close reading of the text of the Torah, when you notice certain things, words that appear or orders or repetitions, you can very often match things up to say, the Torah is hinting something to me. And when we put the whole story together, I think sometimes we see some very interesting things come out from some of the characters that we think we knew, but maybe we didn't really know as much as we thought we knew prior to reading the text closely. And I think ultimately Lot brings us a great message of what it means to be a member of Avraham Avinu's camp, to have that true ultimate faith and trust in God, that when the going gets tough, we're going to push through and continue to strengthen our belief in God and not take the easy way out and try to go to the land of Egypt and that whole culture. Yeah.
So does anyone ever question Avraham in that he should have tried harder?
That's a good question. It's hard to question Abraham. Abraham, I think, by the way, after this episode, Abraham doesn't give up on Lot. Because what does he do? When he finds out that Lot, his nephew, was captured in the Battle of the Kings, he goes and saves him, right? He goes and saves him. And if I was Abraham at that moment, I think maybe there's a last-ditch effort to save Lot. But what happens after the war is over? Lot goes back to Sodom. He returns back. You would think at that moment, after Lot was in danger and his life was on the line and Abraham saves him, you'd think he'd turn around and say, you know, maybe I made a big mistake. Come to some kind of epiphany. I made a big mistake. I'm coming back to you, Abraham. He doesn't do that. Lot is very comfortable still in his decision, and he goes back to Sodom. And it's that moment when he goes back to Sodom that I think Abraham Avinu realizes there's no more chance for Lot himself. There's no more. It's interesting, after the split between Lot, God comes back to Abraham and tells him, don't worry, you're still going to have children, you're still going to have everything. Because at that moment, Abraham said, what am I supposed to do now? Who's gonna take over? God tells him, don't worry, it wasn't going to be Lot. It's going to be somebody that comes from you. It's going to be somebody different. I don't know. I mean, maybe you could be critical of Abraham and say he didn't do enough. I think after especially putting his life on the line to save his nephew and then still being rejected, I think Abraham did more than we could expect anybody to do in that kind of scenario. That's my take from the Pesukim, but you could look at it in different ways. You know, those are opinionated questions that, you know, you can go kind of either way. Okay, any other? Wonderful. Have a great day. If you want to take the papers, you can. If you want to leave them. Yeah. It's almost like the Torah is foreshadowing to you the catastrophe of this decision.
Of the decision.
Everything that I gave you here is from the Torah.
So I thought that, but then that's what I was wondering about. Why they tell you in advance before Sodom? Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe because
absolutely.
The Torah was written after.
The Torah, the book that we have as it's currently constructed, is, or the Torah itself, no, the Torah is foreshadowing to you what's going to happen. It's telling you right at that moment that Lot made the decision, what the ramifications of that decision are going to be. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Take care.
Yeah, take care.
Enjoy. Enjoy.
How's Bella? Have you seen her?
We FaceTimed, but we didn't...
Smiling
here. Yeah, smiling. She's got her ring. She's got a whole thing. Yeah, it's great, bro.
So nice. So Max is friends with him. Max, he was in...
They're the same age. They
were
in Israel together. Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
He's a great guy.
He's a great guy. Very down to earth. Mm-hmm. Very, like, nice guy. I mean, I knew him when he was...
I only knew him afterwards. I only knew him after he got back from Israel. We connected and learning and things like that. I knew him before he met Mela. He was coming to our learning program and studying him.
So, and I think they met at Max's wedding.
Maybe.
That's a very big swoop.
Yeah.
I'm not had anything to do with it. I know Andrew
Isaac. The fact that they put them in, they got together in Israel. That's why, that's why we have this situation.
And they asked about him. And
I just sent
him
a text from
him. Okay. Oh, okay.
Oh. Today, but they're coming tomorrow. Ken, is it work?
Yeah.
The whole thing is.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, good. I'm good. I'm glad. All right, great. Yes. So what's the procedure going to be after the tefillah is over? Is there going to be
same thing?
You still want there to be a class. You still want there to be everything. Okay. All right, great. No, it's perfect.
Stevie said no because we're having good.
Grace. Do you mind when they leave just pushing that button to close the lights? The doors are locked up, but... Oh, you gotta close them out now.